thanks for listening to another episode of Project Zion. This podcast explores the unique spiritual and theological gifts the Restoration offers for today's world. Project Zion is sponsored by the Latter-day Seekers team from Community of Christ.
Hello, and welcome back to the Project Zion podcast. I'm your host, Carla Long, and I'm thrilled to welcome back Tony and Charmaine Chavala-Smith to our series, Percolating on Faith. Hey, Tony. Hey, Charmaine.
Hi, Carla.
Hi, Carla.
Welcome
Happy
back.
To be back.
Yeah. Thanks. Now, today's topic is a little bit different as we are tackling the season of Lent. Well, okay, we're not tackling Lent. We're just really discussing Lent, but this is actually the first in a new series called Common Grounds, which will explore the liturgical calendar, including discussion of different seasons like Ordinary Time or Pentecost or Advent or Epiphany. Now, if you have no idea what these things are and are curious about them, then stay tuned. This series will start soon with a brand new host, Karen Peter. And again, that series is named Common Grounds. But for now, Tony and Charmaine have graciously offered to start us off with a discussion about Lent, because that is coming up sooner rather than later this year. So, Tony, Charmaine, I can't wait to talk about Lent with you.
It's not very usual that you hear somebody say, I can't wait to talk about Lent. Because Lent traditionally in Christianity is a period of fasting and self-denial. But we're going to talk about how that's a good thing.
Oh, good, because fasting is not one of my favorite activities, nor it has never been one of my favorite activities.
Well, so we can just start by saying that the English word Lent comes from an old Anglo-Saxon word, lengten, which means springtime. And the practices typically or traditionally connected with Lent go all the way back to the 4th century in Christianity. And there's even evidence that shorter versions of these practices were taking place in the 3rd century. Basically, this practice, this period of time, was around 40 days leading up to Easter. And in the 4th century, the focus of this 40 days before Easter was to get people ready for the biggest worship service of the year, which was the Easter or Paschal Vigil. And it was also a time of preparing new candidates for baptism. So in the 4th century at least, baptisms were typically done on Easter or Easter at midnight. And most of the people who were being baptized had been in a long period of catechism or education into the Christian faith, sometimes as long as 3 years, depending on the place. And in the 40 days leading up to Easter, this was a period of intense fasting and kind of your final boarding procedures, really, if you want to look at it that way. And the whole church was asked, encouraged to pray and fast during this period so that everybody was spiritually ready for both the initiation of new people into Christianity and for Easter. And then this practice then continued into the Middle Ages and modern period of taking 40 days leading up to Easter to reflect on one's life and think about one's priorities.
And of course, the 40 days are in remembrance of Jesus' 40 days in the wilderness and his time of preparation before his ministry began. And the whole idea of going into, in a way, an empty place so that one can have a clearer vision of their own spiritual state, so that there are not so many distractions that mask the realities within us, but also and especially the reality of our relationship with God. And so the whole, at its very basic, it's following Jesus. It's following Jesus into the wilderness and creating a time and space where we look more closely at what's happening in us, how we're reacting to the world around us, but also what is the health of our relationship, our interactions with God.
So I realized that the 40 days came from Jesus's 40 days in the wilderness, but I never really put it together that Jesus's 40 days in the wilderness came right before his baptism, and then the third or fourth century practice of Easter, around Easter time, having multiple baptisms. That's so interesting to put that all together. Thank you for that.
Well, actually, it came right after his baptism, but before but before his ministry. And so it is almost, in a way, a saint, in many ways, still a preparation for going out into the world, whether it's baptism of people into Christianity or Jesus' preparation to take on his ministry. So there's a good parallel there.
Oh, thanks for setting me straight on that. Sorry, listeners, for for giving you wrong information. Yeah, that's so interesting, though, the 40 days and the baptism. I had never put that together. So in the past, they used to do a ton of baptisms around Easter Sunday.
Yes, that was the practice for quite a long time in the ancient church.
And mm-hmm. It still persists in some Eastern Orthodox traditions where baptism happens just before Easter, and others too.
In Catholic and Orthodox Christianity, the Easter Vigil the whole Paschal Vigil, which includes Monday, Thursday, and Good Friday, and Holy Saturday, and then Easter Sunday, is really, it's filled with worship. And I always have admired that. I think I don't mean to put down Christmas, but actually, in terms of Christian theology, Holy Week and Good Friday and Easter Sunday are way more important than Christmas. Which doesn't mean, Carla, you still can't give me presents, but it's
I would never think that, Tony. Now you say that Lent lasts 40 days, but I know that when I have given up things for Lent, it seems like a lot longer than 40 days. And it took me a long time to realize that is 40 days minus the Sunday. So the Sundays don't count in the 40 days. Isn't that true?
In the Western tradition, that's true. And that's because Sunday is always thought of in Christian theology as Resurrection Day. So Resurrection Day is a
celebration.
Yeah, right. So we don't fast on Resurrection Day. Now, in the Eastern Christian tradition, at least once upon a time, the Lenten fast lasted a little longer because they excluded Saturday and Sunday. But in the Western tradition, it's been Sunday that has been traditionally exempted. Yeah, that's a good word. So it's a bit longer than 40 days, but it starts on Ash Wednesday, and most of the time, Ash Wednesday falls somewhere in early February. And, if you want to follow the calendar through, I mean, we started anywhere, but we'll start Ash Wednesday, Lent, and then Holy Week. And then with Easter, there are seven Sundays of Easter. So Easter is a season in the Christian calendar. And that's followed by Trinity Sunday and Pentecost. And then after Pentecost, which is typically in May, late May, then we go into ordinary time. And ordinary time means it's a period in the Christian calendar in which there are no special celebrations. And ordinary time then ends with the start of Advent. And then Advent leads up to Christmas and Christmastide. And then Christmas moves into Epiphany, which is the 12th day of Christmas is Epiphany. And then we move back into ordinary time with the Sundays marked as first Sunday after Epiphany, second Sunday after Epiphany. So there's a little chunk of ordinary time in the winter and a really big chunk of ordinary time summer, fall.
I think you just said two of my least favorite words, no feasts.
Oh, you can always make some up.
I usually do. So you mentioned that Lent starts on Ash Wednesday. And so I on Ash Wednesday, of course, sometimes you see people with ashes on their forehead. What is that all about?
So the ashes have multiple meanings as a symbol. In traditional worship services, there's a rite called the imposition of ashes, and the tradition typically has been to save the palms from the previous year's Palm Sunday, and then burn them and create ash out of them just before the following Ash Wednesday, so almost a year. And then in the imposition of ashes, people come forward, and whether it's a Catholic or Protestant church, the priest or the pastor marks a cross on your forehead with the ash, or makes a little mark with the ash. And the traditional words are, dust thou art, unto dust thou shalt return. And it's a reminder that human beings are mortal. We're not gods. We're mortal, finite beings. We will have an end. And so it's a calling us to remember that we will die.
And but the fact that it is done in the form of a cross is also the reminder of the promise of resurrection. And so in some ways, it's this overview of the season that it is beginning, that we are dust, and yet what is it that God's promise provides as in the idea of eternal life? So there's so much as far as symbol. And Tony's was saying about how this is what is traditionally done. But I think we need to acknowledge that within Community of Christ, Ash Wednesday and the whole Lenten season is still something that's quite new to us as well. And that in many congregations, we really don't have really deep traditions about things like the imposition of ashes and how we do Lent. But we are in the process of learning that and of taking it in. And I've been quite surprised at the ways in which it really has taken hold within the church. And I think one of the reasons why is that I think as a church, as we have become both more ecumenical and also been more intentional about being focused on Christ, on Jesus, on what it means to follow him, we pretty quickly saw that our Easters were pretty impoverished. Typically, and this still happens in plenty of Community of Christ congregations, but typically what would have happened in the past, a decade or two ago, is that you would go to church on Palm Sunday, and so you have the joyous entry of Jesus into Jerusalem, and then the next Sunday you come back and you're celebrating Easter and Jesus rising from the dead. But there had been no time, no thought, no emotional energy spent in between on reflection on the Last Supper, Jesus' arrest and trial, his crucifixion, the despair of his followers, and then the resurrection. And so I think that's one of the reasons it's really filled a need in the church and has been embraced, I think, quite well in many parts of the church in the U.S. In other parts of the world, I think there has been more of a taking in some of the Lenten season, but in more traditionally, in some of our places where the church has existed more for a longer time, we're just exploring it. We're just starting to take that in and really understand what it can do for us in understanding ourselves and who God is, what God has done for us in Christ, what Christ is continually inviting us to. Anyhow, so I think that's kind of gives a perspective of kind of where we've been and why this is increasingly important to us as a denomination.
I mean, you're exactly right. If we do not look at Easter time as a whole, we would just go from the celebration of Palm Sunday to the celebration of Easter. In typical American fashion, we love to celebrate. And it's hard for us to feel uncomfortable. And those days, the Maundy Thursday, the Good Friday, the Holy Saturday, those are uncomfortable days. Mm-hmm. And Charmaine, right. You said something about Lent, we go to an empty place. And I really appreciate that because we don't like to be in an empty place. We don't like to physically, we don't like to fast. I don't like to fast. That's uncomfortable to feel empty. And it's uncomfortable to feel that sadness and emptiness of what happened to Jesus Christ and what we did to Jesus Christ 2,000 years ago. And so, gosh, I mean, it's just really important to really feel those things in order to feel the true joy on Easter morning is what I think.
Yeah, I would agree. Because much of Christianity and the traditions that have been passed on through the centuries, the different aspects of Lent, the different aspects of the Christmas season as well, these are visible and tangible ways of teaching the story, mm-hmm. teaching the Christian story, teaching the story of Jesus. And by putting ourselves physically and emotionally into those times, it allows us to make real who Jesus is, what he was offering to us, what he does offer to us. And that lets the reality of the first century live in us in a completely different way. So, yeah, letting ourselves feel sad, letting ourselves look within and see those things that we recognize need to be changed. And so, you know, with the Lenten season comes this honesty as we look inward about what are the things. This is the reason why we give up things during mm-hmm. Lent, is because we're wanting to be honest about what are the things that drive us. What are the things that consume us? Talking about the emptiness, with Bible study group we were part of once, as we talked about Lent and the things that we needed to make more room for, one person said, "Well, I just listen to the radio all the time, and especially when I'm in the car, and I realize that the reason I do that is that I'm uncomfortable with silence, and I'm uncomfortable with what's going on inside of me. I'm uncomfortable with the possibility that God may be speaking to me, and I don't want to hear. And so I always have noise around me." And so that's part of the thing about fasting, not necessarily from food, but from those things that we have let control us, so that we make some spaces, some emptier spaces, to recognize where God already is, or to let some new things grow there.
Mm-hmm. And I'm going to piggyback on something Charmaine mentioned a few minutes ago about the importance of story. So in Community of Christ, for the past 60 years, we've been on a really fascinating theological and spiritual journey. And we as a denomination have decided over the last six decades that the Jesus story and not the Joseph Smith story is the central story of the church.
Amen.
And so that once we've made that decision as a community, then we realize, oh, gee, there's centuries of Christian wisdom about how to enter into the Jesus story each year in deeper ways, right? So it's one thing to know about the Jesus story. It's quite another thing altogether to enter into the story each year and follow the journey of Jesus and go deeper with him each year. That's what this liturgical calendar is about. That's what the lectionary is about. That's what things like Lent are about. It's making sure that we keep the Jesus story absolutely as the center of the church and its message. So, and that for Community of Christ has involved some long Lenten seasons historically, where we've had to learn to give up some of our past preoccupations with the Joseph story and with who we thought we were and all that. So as a community, we've gone through some long Lent times, but you know, I really like what Charmaine said about the importance of learning to recognize the things that control us as individuals. It's so important in the spiritual life, and Lent is a wonderful time to bring some practices into our lives to help us do that.
There was an article that we read, oh, I don't know how long ago.
Oh, it might be from 1998. Oh, it's from 1998. It's a long time ago.
Oh, my goodness. But it really stuck with us, and we've used it in different places. And it was from an article in the Christian Century about Lent. And it was talking about thinking about giving up those things that we use as a pacifier in our lives, or in Canadian, a soother, that there are things that we do, or activities that we partake of, or foods that we eat, that we do to soothe ourselves, as a pacifier, to distract us from some other things, to distract ourselves from the fact that there's a hunger inside that isn't being met, for instance. So I just thought that was such a good image as we come into Lent, is to think about what are my go-to things that I use to keep myself from noticing what I need to be struggling with to grow in my relationship with God. What are the things I use as an avoidance, or as a distraction, or you know, anyhow. So I think it's a good image. And then fasting is not so much about, oh, poor me, I've given up chocolate or whatever. But it's about letting go of something that I am grasping too tightly, and that I'm wanting to be my security, and perhaps giving too much power in my life, or that I'm worshiping in some way. So it kind of then lets fasting be about putting things in proper perspective.
Yeah.
Sounds like that Lent even stretches a little bit longer than those 40 days then, because maybe people need to spend a few moments or some time thinking about, what is it that holds me back in my relationship with Christ? And really do some reflection on those things. I mean, I remember I didn't really even know what Lent was growing up Community of Christ. You know, I wasn't sure what Lent was, but I knew about it. So I gave up meat many times for many different years. And I'm a little annoyed to know that I could have eaten it on Sundays, because I didn't even do that. I have to admit, if I could have had a hamburger on Sundays, that would have made Lent a lot easier for me. And we all know making Lent easier is my goal. But anyway, it sounds like people really need to think about, what is it that holds me back? What is it that distracts me from being the person I'm called to be? So maybe Lent should last even longer, even before Ash Wednesday, before everything gets started. Think about what is that thing that keeps you from being who you're called to be?
Absolutely. And I think the beauty of the liturgical calendar, the Christian calendar, is that probably of our own free will, we might keep putting that off, and Lent makes us have to consider it. Gives us an opportunity.
And I hate to tell you this, Carla, but in medieval Christianity, Advent was also a period of fasting.
What?
Yes, seriously. So it's like the season of Advent in the Middle Ages was 4 weeks of fasting in preparation for the Nativity. And of course, if you think about what, at least in American culture, we've turned Advent into, it's quite the opposite of a period of self-reflection and self-denial, too.
Yeah, it's time for little smokies and cheese balls, in my opinion.
Absolutely. But, you know, there are some wider political and social implications of the liturgical calendar. What if these periods of fasting were also times for us to be circumspect about overconsumption of the earth's resources? I mean, there are all kinds. This is not just about personal piety. There are bigger dimensions to this. We consume way more than we should. We are harming the earth, harming its atmosphere by our overconsumption. What if part of our spiritual practice in terms of self-denial is about finding ways to use less as a way of entering into the desert with Jesus? I think there are all kinds of justice implications for these spiritual practices. And I returned also, you know, we live in a culture, U.S. culture, we hate emptiness, right? We are so afraid of empty spots that we do everything we can to fill emptiness, whether with, if it's in the natural world, we want to fill it with, you know, housing developments. We want more strip malls, and I know I want more potato chips. So,
well,
who doesn't, right, Carla?
Right, exactly.
But so, you know, what is this fear? It's the interesting thing in the Bible is that God seems to love emptiness, right? And Jesus not only goes to the wilderness for 40 days, but there are other times in the gospel story when Jesus leaves the disciples and is out by himself. And he even calls them once, come with me to a desert place. And it's really, really good for us regularly to be stripped down to just who we are and what we've got. And in those situations, to learn how to let God be God and let God be enough for us.
Is it okay to maybe add something during Lent rather than take something away? Or does that part not matter? Is it really about what distracts us from being the people that we're called to be? Or is it something about giving something up? Like, I know people give up Facebook during Lent, and I know people who have added in meditation during Lent, you know? So is it okay to do those kinds of things?
Yeah, I think the two really go together. I think they're really two sides of the same coin. If we are fasting, if we're letting go of something that has some kind of control over us or that we are preoccupied with in some way, then we are already creating a new kind of space. We're creating time that we can choose to do something else in. Sometimes we don't realize that, but to say that even giving up, say, meat or giving up chocolate, that means that we are doing more of something else. We're eating more of something else. We're taking care of our bodies in a different way. So there is some you can approach it from either way, I think. The other way is, as you were saying, to say, I'm going to add in this discipline or time to write each day a note of gratitude to someone who has influenced my life. Or I'm going to take a moment to write a prayer or to journal. And by making that time, you're choosing to not do something else. Mm-hmm. So it's gain and loss both ways, and not loss in a negative sense at all, but making space and and choosing how you're going to fill that space. It can be both at the same time. And I think that's sometimes a good way to determine whether the Lenten practice that you've chosen or the kind of fasting that you've chosen is just about self-sacrifice, or if it's helping you to grow into your discipleship, into your awareness and walk with God. So I like the question, because I think it contains the truth and the answer within it. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. So we kind of have really dove into Lent, but I kind of want to back out of Lent just for a second and ask you about Mardi Gras, because that has a relationship with Lent. And I have actually attended Mardi Gras down in Louisiana, and I got to tell you, I saw things these little Kansas eyes didn't think she'd ever see. So it doesn't seem to have a lot to do with, fasting and, that kind of stuff. So tell me what Mardi Gras is, please, and its relationship.
Well, yeah, Mardi Gras and Fat Tuesday and those celebrations are traditionally were kind of your last time to have any rich food you could have before Lent. And so they were celebrations of fat in some respects.
I love Mardi Gras. What am I talking about?
So I think in cultures that, especially in Catholic cultures where Lent was taken fairly seriously, there are also at times of the church year when there's a lightening up of that as people get ready to go into a more introspective period.
Or, I mean, another way, again, it's about making space. In some cultures, the celebration before entering Lent is about cleaning the house of these things that that could be
temptations.
Yeah. So, rich foods, using up all the cream and all the sweet things in the house. So using up the ingredients that would, that could draw you into, to more rich food. And so that when you enter into Lent, there are simpler foods that to choose from, and that you're not tempted by these other kinds of things. So part of it was using up the ingredients so that you could enter into this time of simplicity.
But let's just say that human beings being what we are, there are lots of ways to take what Charmaine just described and kind of turned into a pagan bacchanalia before Lent. So human beings are human beings, and we all always are looking for ways to get the things we want. I know what you're talking about in terms of New Orleans, and certainly in the Southern Hemisphere and places like Brazil and so on, that period before Lent starts, really, I don't think medieval Christians would have entirely recognized what was happening before Lent in some of those places as anything quite like what they would have done. But anyway,
forget medieval Christians. I didn't recognize what was going on.
I'm sure you didn't. But I remember several years ago, when you were still living in Independence, when we had you over on Fat Tuesday for supper, and we made a macaroni and cheese dish that had, like, I don't know, five different kinds of cheese in it. It was pretty rich and amazing.
I remember that with very fond memories. I also believe it had bacon in it. So what a wonderful Fat Tuesday. What a Fat Tuesday.
We were using up those items before Lent. Whatever Charmaine says.
Well, thank you for explaining that. I know that some people totally or might not even recognize that there is a relationship between Mardi Gras, which means Fat Tuesday, and Ash Wednesday happening the next day. So we've talked about Lent. We've talked about some different things that we could give up or add. But are there different practices that we could do during Lent to help keep Christ at the center of our thoughts? And is there anything like that that we can look to?
I mean, I think a simple one is taking on some kind of daily reading, even if it's a passage from the Gospels or from good spiritual writers, taking on something that will keep bringing us back to who Jesus is and what he calls us to be is really important. There are various online sources for readings, like Richard Rohr's website. And then in the Community of Christ, there's daily bread. So I know people who during Lent, but actually all year long, they're very diligent about it. They plan daily reading from that resource called Daily Bread, which gives just little reflections and
right.
scripture texts and so on.
And Katie Harmon McLaughlin, who is helping to head up the Daily Bread readings online, is very intentional about having the readings in the different church seasons be focused on them. So there, and I'm not sure if this year in the Spiritual Formation Center, the blog that is there, in the past has had readings, Lenten readings, every day or every week with some ideas on how to incorporate them personally. So there's lots of resources out there, but Daily Bread will have some things that are specifically focused mm-hmm. on Lent, so it helps you keep the season in mind, as well as the typical scriptures that you would read there, but it expands it a little bit.
There are all kinds of devotional books, devotional guides that can help you through different seasons of the church year. I would get on a site like Abingdon or Cokesbury, which is a Methodist publisher, or get on a Catholic site like Paulist Press and just type in liturgical calendar or church year or lectionary and just see what you come up with in terms of sources. There's lots of stuff. I keep a Book of Common Prayer around, which is of course the Anglican prayer book, and that has, I mean, that's, we're talking about a text that's basically 500 years old that has routines in it that can help you in the period of Lent as well. So there's all kinds of ways to approach the Lenten season. The main thing is not to get caught in the discipline itself as though it's an end in itself. Whatever discipline whatever thing you give up or whatever thing you take on, it's not an end in itself. And it's not about, you don't do this because you're somehow trying to earn God's grace, right? Or that somehow God is going to like you more if you do these things.
Right.
No, this is about practices that help us live in God's grace, not earn it. So that's important to remember.
And maybe understand more deeply what God's grace actually means. And you know, well, I don't know if we'll ever understand it, but live into it even more.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and I think we can appreciate God's grace more and more as we become more and more honest about who we really are as individuals. Right? The more we are willing to see ourselves as we really are, with all of our moral warts and bumps and bruises, and not hide from that, the more we see how amazing God's grace really is.
And that's one of the beauties of Lent, is that we're invited to go there, to become more self-aware, to look more honestly at all of those other sides of us that we don't usually let the world see, and to be honest with ourselves and to be honest with God about that. And so the letting things go may include letting go of some of our own images of ourselves, ones that are very prideful and ones that may be self-destructive. That's a whole other place to go with the idea of fasting, is to break some of those habits about our own inner talk and instead replace it with what we know about how God sees us and what Jesus kept saying about people, about our worth, and that we are loved, that we are forgiven already, and that we are called. And so Lent has all kinds of dimensions to it that can help us go deeper in what it means to follow Christ and deeper into what it means to be a beloved child of God.
Whew. Wow. So thank you for saying that. I appreciate that. So we've talked about readings that we can do during Lent. Is there any other practices that we could look at to help remind us about the season and it being a somewhat sad and somber time?
Sad and somber is true, but self-emptying and self-reflection, it's not sadness for its own sake. When we see ourselves, when we get glimpses of ourselves as we really are, yeah, there will sometimes be, oh, gee, I wish I weren't like that, or I wish I had said this differently, or so on. And that's okay. But the aim is joy. And joy has to do with God's presence, not with feeling bubbly either. But it has to do with God's presence. And so things to do, things to take on. Let me suggest that for people listening to this podcast in the United States right now, in a highly, highly politically divided and kind of ugly time, what are things we can give up? What are things we can take on? Taking on love of the other and concern for the other, giving up, bashing of the other for, what would change if we tried to take on or give up things that might have national or cultural importance? I think that's a place we ought to dare to go in community of Christ, and see if we can live through the current time in a different way together. That's just an example.
Yeah, and that brings up another one, and that is that another way that we can live Lent is in our congregational life. And as we think about the things that build up and the things that tear down, to intentionally choose, again, making room for something and letting go of something. And so letting go of gossiping about other church members, letting go of our own judgment of others, or our hesitance to risk friendship, and then making space for accepting and loving and encouraging and affirming each other. So there's so many arenas in which we can practice Lent in our relationships, but especially in our congregational life, because that's a place where we get into patterns pretty easily, and we either get comfortable with our patterns and they help us just coast along, or we're constantly unhappy in our congregation because of some other patterns that we or others may have, that we may all be a part of. And so Lent can be, so that's a practice that we can do each Sunday and those times in between when we are in communication with people in our congregation, is what do I need to let go of, and it may be a hurt or a grudge. And what do I need to take on? And it might mean forgiving or inviting, inviting people into our own lives a bit deeper, or anyhow. So that's a whole nother dimension to go. And especially in regard to communal life, to life as a congregation, as a community, I think if you were to choose one passage to kind of go back to throughout Lent, one that might be really good, and this just kind of came to mind, so this is not anybody's long tradition, but to go to Philippians 2, 1 through 18, let's say, and let that be a place where you keep going back to from time to time, where it talks about who Christ is and what he has done. This is the idea of Christ emptying himself of his divinity in order to come and be with us. And also there's within this chapter and throughout Philippians, but in this chapter as well, the idea of being of one mind, of not letting our differences divide us, but to let Christ in our midst unite us. And then it goes into what's called the Christ hymn, which talks about who it is that Christ is and what he has done to break down those walls between us. Mm-hmm. So anyhow, Philippians 2, chapter 2, up to verse 18.
Beautiful text.
That sounds great. You know, you too reminded me of a couple years ago, I did something called 40 Acts, and I think it was out of England. And once you sign up for it, it sends you an email every day, and you have a different task every single day during the time of Lent. And sometimes it's buying coffee for someone. Sometimes it's like making a money jar and like putting extra cash in there. But a lot of these things were leading up to the Saturday before Easter. They wanted you to throw a party for your neighbors. And for me, even though I love people and I'm such an extrovert, that was really uncomfortable for me because I did not know my neighbors. I did not know the actual people who live next door to me and across the street from me. So it was a really uncomfortable thing to ask. But what it did, it was make these relationships just blossom. And it changed a lot of things about where I live. And it changed a lot of the way I interacted with people where I lived. And so it sounds like in some ways, Lent for me at that point, and what you guys have been talking about is about being uncomfortable and stepping out of this place where we think we know everything and we think that we already are everything to a place of realizing that we're not.
That's a very lovely summary of it, I think. You know, when I think about you inviting neighbors to a party, neighbors you didn't know, there is both a giving up and a taking on, right? So you give up your discomfort, and perhaps if it were me, I'd give up my embarrassment that I didn't know them. And then taking on, making space for neighbors, loving your neighbor. So you give up and you take on. Interesting how that works.
It was really interesting. There was this really nice guy who could never remember my name, I think, so he just called me darling, and I kind of hate that, but I really liked it coming out of his mouth. So I was like, oh, that's my friend who calls me darling. Hi. Oh gosh. Well, is there anything else that you guys can think of about Lent that you wanted to talk about and I didn't ask the right questions?
I can't think of anything else. I thought you asked good questions, and we've been happy to share about this too. And Lent is there to be practiced every year, and there's no getting Lent right. It's practice, practice, practice. So we years ago in the church's magazine, The Herald, we used to write a column in there, and we wrote a column. I can find this and send it to you if you want to post it. it's the column was titled "Let There Be Lent," and so some of the things we've shared today you are in that column, but I'd be happy to send that to you to post on the site if you'd like. We've enjoyed being able to talk about something that means a lot to us, which is the liturgical calendar and the seasons of it.
Right, yeah. And Lent has become something that, if you engage it at all, you can't help but be changed positively by it. And so I think it's an intriguing time because it's something that we have a tendency to avoid, you know, the introspection and the feeling deeply and the simplifying, the letting go. So it's a great place to discover all kinds of things.
Well, it sounds like it. Thank you both for helping us understand more about what it means. And yes, we would love to post the article with this podcast. So listeners, I hope that you go to projectzionpodcast.org and you can click on that article and take a look at it. Tony, Charmaine, thank you again for discussing, and thank you for being with us and for giving up your valuable time.
Thank you, Carla, for great questions and insight and taking us down these paths.
Really, really enjoy the time doing this with you.
The views expressed in this episode are of those speaking and do not necessarily reflect the official views of the Latter-day Seekers team or of Community of Christ. The music has been provided by Ben Howington. You can find his music at mormonguitar.com.